Greetings, Zimbabwe, Africa, and the world. Welcome to In Conversation with Trevor, brought to you by Titan Law. I go beyond the headlines and beyond the sensational. Today, I'm in conversation with Zimbabwe radio and TV personality, Samantha Mary Musa, otherwise known as Miss Red. Greetings, Samantha Musa, otherwise known as Miss Red. So I'm going to be using Miss Red and Samantha because the world out there knows you as Miss Red. Where were you born and where did you go to school? Where were you educated?
Can I say greetings back to you first?
Absolutely.
So Samantha Musa was born in Harare two beautiful human beings, my mother and my father. But they came from, my dad comes from a financial background, so he was a banker. And I think I was born when they were still living in Tafara, right? Okay. And then, you know, my dad was coming up in the ranks. So as he went up, we moved quite a lot. So I was born, we were in Tafara. Then, you know, he managed to get a little bit of money. And then he got his first house in the CBD. Back then, it was a big achievement coming from going into post-independence. It was a very interesting time for them, where black people started to acquire assets, etc. So, then he moved into the CBD at some point. We were living in Warren Park, and then it's just a long story. But I was born.
And school?
Where to begin? I think I went to several schools.
Right.
Because of the movement. So I went to Hallingbury, I went to Bindura Primary, I went to Lewisham, I went to Heritage, I went to Spaces, I went to Maputo International. I was literally just moving around.
You, with that background, over the past years, you've created a powerful brand for yourself. And you've become what they call an influencer. Your opinions do matter for a young person like you. How have you done that?
I actually don't quite know how it happened to be. It wasn't like I sat down and I said with myself, okay, this is how it's going to happen and I'm going to become an influencer at the end of it. But I just tried to be as honest as I could be with a lot of the things that I did. And in turn, I think people resonated with my honesty. But it started off kind of like an accident and then it became intentional. So now I sat down and I said, okay, how does everyone else do it outside within the profession that I'm in? What are the steps that I need to take in order for people to start looking at me as a brand? It didn't happen initially with a plan, but somewhere in the middle, I decided to be intentional.
So to you, the point around being authentic, being yourself, and then being consistent about that, how have you been able to maintain that?
It's actually very hard because, like you said, it's an environment where everyone is trying to project this image, which a lot of the times it's kind of hard to live up to, you know. And you look at, you know, I won't say the names, but you look at certain individuals and you're like, wow, they live such a glamorous life. And then you get to learn of the actual stories and you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't really correlate with what you're showing online. So it brought me back to a place where I was like, do I really want to be that person who projects something that they are not? So that's where that actually came from.
And what would you say the core principles and values of the brand that you're trying to project?
The core, I think it's vast because I'm a mom of two beautiful daughters. So I'm a family person first and foremost, and then everything else is secondary to me. So a lot of my values come from the fact that I'm a mom. So there's certain things that I just won't do because I'm scared that one day my daughters will be like, so what were you doing? You know, so I think a lot of it is based from the fact that I'm a parent.
I've also realized that you have no difficulties with being vulnerable, showing your weaker side, showing and sharing the difficulties that you're going through. Talk to me about that ability to be vulnerable in a public space.
I think it's kind of to my detriment at times, because I have a lot of people who have a lot to say, and you have people who also think that they know me. But I kind of take, especially my, I think my Twitter is the worst, whereas with my Instagram, it's not as pronounced as my Twitter or my Facebook also. But I kind of find it to be like a diary, you know. So I'll go out and say my truth in hopes that someone else can bring in their truth and maybe share and resonate with the story. But it's been hard, eh? People are just, they're cruel.
Talk to me about it being hard. What's been the hardest, and what's hit you the most? What's been the most painful?
A lot of the times you find someone who just say something. Sometimes it's just a lie. And I have people that I'm answerable to, apart from the fact that everyone knows within my circle that I'm a public figure. But I have friends who I'm accountable to. I've got family who I'm accountable to. So you find these big lies and you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. But because someone said it online, it has to be true, right? Mm-hmm. So it's...
That's the assumption.
Yes, that's the assumption. Mm-hmm. So I never have an opportunity to defend myself, because the minute I start to defend myself, people will be like, why is she defending herself? So I have moments that it actually just affects my mental health, because I'm wondering, why are they lying? What's the end goal? Mm-hmm. You know, and here I am, I'm trying to do something that is different for my generation, and yet people are so hell-bound on just bringing me down with any lie they can find. Not because it's true, but because maybe there's a coincidence, and then, you know, they link that together, and that's it. I think I even have challenges with my male friends, because they'll tell me, no, I can't be seen in public with you, because people will start to assume something. And these are some of the things that I have to face and deal with, that I don't necessarily put across to everyone. But these are the ripple effects of, you know, that vulnerability as well.
Do you ever get used to that kind of toxicity?
No.
So it hurts all the time?
All the time. And it hurts more and more as you, because people don't see me as a human anymore, you know.
Very interesting. So people don't see you as a human being. You're an object to be attacked, to be criticized. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that.
Where to start? Now you're going to make me cry. I remember one time, and I was saying on my Twitter, why do you guys find it okay to do this to me? And someone said to me, you chose to be a public figure, so we will scrutinize as much as we want. And they weren't shy about saying it. But at that point, I was like, are we here? And then it begins to make me question, do I still want to be doing this, or do I want my private life and just to remove myself from public and, you know, go and farm somewhere, you know, away from all of this. But, it's a lot.
Is quitting the public space an option?
Now, no.
No. Yeah. You are into it. They will deal with you.
Because they would have won. Mm. And I can't let them win. Mm. Yeah.
You have received a number of accolades and awards. Mm-hmm. One that sticks out to me is, you know, being recognized as one of 100 most influential young people below 40. Mm-hmm. That must mean a lot to you.
It does. It speaks to the work that I do. Mm-hmm. It also speaks to what I still need to do. So there's quite a lot to that, but, you know, people always argue and say, why was she there as well? But, you know, it is what it is. Mm-hmm.
You have a passion for the creative industry.
Yes.
Talk to me about that and the, you know, surfacing new talent. Mm-hmm. What's been the highlight for you in that space?
I like to call myself a connector. I connect people, and even when I don't actually mention it in public that this is what I did, I feel that we are in a generation whereby we don't want to share our skills, we don't want to share our knowledge. And I just thought it's important for me to do that. I gain nothing. A lot of the times I just do it because I'm passionate about it. And I studied music as well in high school. So that was one of the subjects that I did. So I'm very passionate about music and anything that's within the creative industry. So because I have certain pieces of knowledge that I have, which are very basic in the global scheme of things, I just decided, you know what, if I can share, I will. I know a couple of people that I have intensively shared a lot of knowledge with your Enzo Aishals, your Aishan. I have like conversations around how we can build each other. But yeah, it's been an important thing that I needed to do because no one else was doing it.
What was the biggest reward for doing that for you?
I don't think I look for a reward as such because obviously it's not monetary. Mm-hmm. But when you look back at it and say at least one person did better because I was in their life, that's what I always look forward to. Because my pastor always says that if someone experiences you and they go away the same, then what is the point?
Yeah. You've created this brand, like I said, and you now have a number of corporate brands wanting to ride on your brand. Talk to me about that experience and these brands that have come to embrace who you are and the brand that you've become.
I think I've been very intentional about how I want to be aligned and what kind of brands will be associated with Miss Red. It's been good because corporate Zimbabwe is difficult.
Right.
It's for you to get any money out of them. It's like, you know, but I've managed to become friends with some very good people and I've established that social capital actually does work. Mm. Yeah, it does.
And
work.
Which brands do you have relationships at the moment?
Ooh, I've got a lot of brands that I'm working with.
Them one, two, three?
Old Mutual.
Right.
A program called Amazing Voices. We've been working a lot together. Obviously, Coca-Cola. That's been over the years. Net One has been a really long time working with them. Yeah, I can go on and on. Zimoko, so many brands.
What's the exciting part of that association for you?
It opens up the doors to a lot of different people that you may not have had access to. So when you're seen working with certain brands, people automatically assume, oh, okay, so maybe she's good for us as well. Mm. Yeah.
I've been struck by the fact that you are the youngest person to be on In Conversation with Trevor. I have been struck by the fact that you are drawn to philanthropy. Mm-hmm. You're doing a lot of philanthropic projects.
Yeah.
What inspires your involvement with philanthropy and which projects are you involved in?
Okay. Philanthropy comes in stages for me, different stages of my life with different stories. So when I was younger, because I'm a firstborn in my family, I remember I started my period. That was the first thing. I started my period and I hadn't had any conversations about it with my mother. So my period started, I think I was about 10 years old, and I was bleeding, and then I took my panty off and I was running around the house and I was like to my house help at the time, Tataka period. You know, it was like a really big thing for me at the time. But she then pulled me aside because obviously I had brothers. Then she's like, you don't do that. You can't do that. But then later on in life, I started to think to myself, if I had had someone to talk me through that process prior to it happening, maybe I could have handled it differently. So then came an organization called Girls Are Us. So they do quite a lot of work in rural Zimbabwe where they are mobilizing sanitary wear for girls, but also they do sexual reproductive health education. So I fell in love with what they were doing. I wanted to do something more, not only because there was a gap that needed to be helped in the country, but because of my own story of not knowing how to deal with my body. So it became a conversation that I wanted to have with other little girls who may not have a big sister or an aunt or someone who can talk to them about the processes that happen with our bodies as women. So that's where my first philanthropic endeavor actually started. And, you know, the conversation carried on to young people needing to figure out how I can impact young people in different ways. And then it got to Red Market Sunday, which I kind of call it a philanthropic thing because it's dealing with SMEs and young people specific. So all of these things were necessitated by stories within my life. And I thought, what if someone just gave me a chance, you know?
Yeah. How is the Red Sunday market going? I see there's quite a lot of vibe on Sundays. Are you opening doors, opportunities for people? Do you mind to share that experience with us?
So Red Market Sunday is an initiative which we started because myself and my team, we were thinking around how we can help young people and young businesses without breaking the bank for them. Because obviously, when we're starting out, sometimes you don't have money for marketing. And here I was, and I was having conversations with myself, and I said, how can we elevate the conversation online from the toxicity and find a way to get synergies amongst businesses, amongst clients, amongst, you know, products and services, amongst buyers and sellers. So then we thought of Red Market Sunday. So I'm just going to explain a little bit what it actually is.
Sure.
So Red Market Sunday is an online marketing tool whereby you literally just post on your Twitter handle as a business, as a business person who may have a service or a product that you have, and I basically retweet to my platform. As you know, I think I've got plus 122,000 on my Twitter.
That's huge.
I try. Not like you, but... So I decided to use that same platform to get eyeballs onto people's products. Mm. So I think in terms of the impressions, I have over 1 million impressions on those things, because it's not just about my platform, but the minute I retweet, they retweet. It's more eyes seeing that. Mm. And hopefully they get business from it.
This is you extending yourself
Yes.
for the benefit of others.
Yeah, because it's great and fine to have beautiful pictures and, you know, show nice clothes. But what more can we do for each other?
Hmm. And I've also been, you know, following the conversations around the politics. Hmm. And your positioning in our Zimbabwean politics is different and interesting. Mm-hmm. What has led you to that space where you are not, you know, subscribing to the binary view of Zimbabwean politics, that you have to be in ZANU-PF or you have to be in MDC. Mm-hmm. You can't be out either to the left or the right or to the center. Take us through your thinking as far as that is concerned.
I think we've lost something in the politics. We've lost the love of Zimbabwe, the love of being Zimbabwean. And I get burnt a lot for that because people don't understand. In Zimbabwe, you have to have been sent by someone from either MDC or ZANU-PF. You can't just be in the middle and you can't just have the Zimbabwean agenda in your heart. So that has kind of destroyed us as a people. In America, you find that, you know, they can have the politics of, you know, the Trumps, the Democrats, and the, you know, it's very toxic as well. But when it's an American position, everyone comes together and no one questions that. If you kill one of their own, they are going to come at you guns blazing. And we don't have that. In Zimbabwe, if you're not supporting a certain party and something happens to you, you deserve it. Mm. And we've really lost our love for Zimbabwe because of the politics. And it breaks my heart because I don't want my children to have to go through the same thing. Mm. I want my children to understand and love being Zimbabwean first, and everything else comes after. So I've really had a lot of back and forths with regards to that. And it's unfortunate because people never believe me. You know, I've been called all sorts of names if I support a certain position or another position. But at the end of the day, I think we need to get back to being Zimbabwean.
How do we, do you think we're making progress in that? What are the challenges of doing that? I mean, it's a noble cause, mm-hmm. of getting us back to being Zimbabweans first, mm-hmm. before anything else. Are we ever going to get there?
Right now, we're in the worst place. Mm-hmm. The worst place, because it's not just about the people, but it's about the leaders. They're not trying to unite people. Mm. If anything, this is the most divided we've been in a very long time. And they're very clear about that. No one is putting people first. No one cares that Zimbabweans are suffering. So let's come together and let's figure it out. I know Kenya is an interesting example because they chose to say, you know what, let's put the people first and then the politics second. But here we don't have that. And I'm sorry to say this so boldly, but I feel like they both don't care. Hmm. Yeah.
Being young as you are, and a powerful person for that matter within your generation, do you think your generation could be the one that changes that kind of toxicity, that kind of division, or we give up, it's going to be the next generation of your kids?
I absolutely believe that we can change it.
We can change it.
I think we've begun to change it because we're understanding how bad it has become. It'll take a few individuals to really stand and be counted with regards to that conversation. It'll be hard. A lot of things will happen in between. A lot of wars will happen to get there. But I do believe our generation still has what it takes. We've experienced the pain, the brunt of the toxicity. But I genuinely believe we've got some powerful voices within our generation which can begin the process of changing what needs to be changed for us to become Zimbabweans first again. It'll be hard. It'll be very hard.
It will be hard. Is it because do you think that there's anything on the side of those who want that unity, that focus on who we are, on being Zimbabwean first? Is there a powerful force to do that, or the force against that is stronger?
I think I wouldn't say there is, because I haven't really seen it, to say that these are the people who want to see the unity. I'll be lying if I said that. So that's what makes it even harder. But I feel that our hearts are in the right place. We know what we need. It's unfortunate that a lot of people will want to go about their business and not care, because that's what we've been conditioned to do. You do your business. If you're successful and if you're moving, that's fine. Don't care about anyone else. But I think there will come something strong enough to unify us. And
is could it be that the noisy crowd that are binary are dominating the conversation, but there's a silent majority who share your views?
I think there is a silent majority that share my views. I actually think there's a very strong silent majority. But if you look at things like online conversations are just really online. There's a real Zimbabwe out there, hey? And we take that for granted. This is why a lot of the times we get lost in the Twitter wars and the conversations on Twitter, and we forget that there's actually a real Zimbabwe which wants things to happen in a certain way. So I believe in that Zimbabwe that wants us to win, irrespective of who's in power. But at the end of the day, the end product should be Zimbabweans should be the winners.
Well, what has made you take that view, which is different, which is not the popular view? What is it that has spoken to you to say, this is the right thing that I ought to be standing up for?
I think I've been privy to a lot of information. So I see very clearly as to where we are and what we're doing wrong, who's doing what wrong. So when I sit and I just kind of analyze everything, I see, okay, maybe this person is doing the right thing, but because there's so much noise, people might not actually see it. And maybe this person has a point, but because there's so much noise again, you may not actually see it. I think that's what really kind of pushed me towards that position, that when we find that unity, we'll see that we can actually work in unison and work towards the Zimbabwe that we actually want.
Hopefully we get there. we actually caught you on your way to the airport. You've got an amazing project.
Yeah.
You are about to launch an energy drink.
Yes.
Talk to us about that exciting project.
Well, without divulging too much,
sure.
I think I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I like exploring new areas. So I've been wanting to do this for over a year now, right? So I finally found a partner to actually do it with. For the longest time, I didn't have the money. Longest time. But I think it's now a time where we can start looking at developing our own products as young Zimbabweans. I think a lot of the times people will tell me, no, you can't be successful in Zimbabwe unless you are affiliated with Ningi or Ningi, right? So I kind of wanted to prove that wrong, because I've seen a lot of friends having businesses that have thrived in the same economy where we have so much to say about. So my newest baby, I just wanted to do something different and,
find when is it coming onto the market, if you're able to share that detail with us?
2 months, okay. You should see it.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell you the name.
Right.
But people will know.
That's interesting. We're looking forward to that. What do you think explains, I mean, you've already talked about, hinted at the problems of getting into business. What do you think explains your success?
A lot of faith, eh?
A lot of faith.
If I tell you anything else, I'll be lying. Because I'm not the most educated person out there. but I was in the right place at the right time, I guess. I have that stubborn faith that, you know, Christians actually don't have. Because Christians say they have faith, but I actually don't think they do. Because they'll say this is possible and they'll start thinking, okay, is it really possible? Do I need, how do I get it done? But I've had that stubborn faith that I have nothing, but God will make a plan. So, yeah.
So God and your faith plays a big role in what you do.
The biggest. Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
I'm very spiritual and I'm very, I'm a believing person. Even the job that I have on radio, I tried for such a long time until I had, one day I came back, I was living in South Africa, then I had to come back because my parents couldn't afford for me to stay there anymore because I had to drop out of university. So I came back, I had nothing to do. I had a little daughter and I needed to support her. So I went to my mom's backyard, started praying, and I had a fight with God. And I was like, God, what do you want me to do in this country of yours? What? I have no job. I have no, you know, degree that I came back with. I'm just literally Samantha with a child and I have no plan. So you need to make my plan right now. Had a very strong, it was a very, I remember very, very, very vividly. It was a very strong prayer that I argued with God. And 10 minutes after I finished my prayer, I got a call from CFM. And that's the job that I have today.
God answered your prayer.
God answered me. Yeah.
You are a single mom to two beautiful daughters. Talk to us about the joys and the challenges of being a single mom.
I always say this, but my daughters are the biggest sacrifice of my career. In that I don't spend enough time with them. I don't give them as much as I would love to because the dad doesn't stay here as well. So it's complex in that I'm literally never there. So I don't know who's parenting them, to be quite honest. People ask about a work-life balance. Doesn't exist in my world. But they're the most understanding children you'll ever find. You know, they'll support me. My older daughter, Hannah, when I get home, she'll hug me. Hi, Mom. How are you?
How old is she?
She's 10.
And the youngest is?
3 years.
3 years.
So they'll run for me when I get home every day at 6. They'll hug me. How was work? And if there's nothing in that, there's certain things that they need in the house. If it's not there, my older daughter will be like, okay, I understand, Mom. You're going through a tough time. But we'll be okay for now. When you're back on your feet, you know, I know you'll get it for us. So these are the conversations that I have with my children, and they've had to become adults, especially the older one. She's had to become an adult because of the career that I chose. So they're my biggest sacrifice.
How do you do with the guilt?
I buy a lot of give. Yeah. I don't know. I try as much as possible to spend more time with them. I do.
And I mean, we've spoken about you being successful, and clearly the brand is out there for all people to see. Have you ever failed at anything?
Almost everything.
Almost everything. Talk to me about how you've recovered from failure, how you rebound. What's the best way of dealing with failure for you?
Someone once told me that failure is sometimes what you need to be able to rise up and just do better for the next time. The job that I have, even, I think I tried a couple of times and then I gave up and then I went away and, you know, it almost felt like a failure. Even when I got the job, I kept on being told, you're not good enough. You're not like Tino Katsande. She was feisty. You're just, you know. And at that point, I really felt like a failure. And I was like, I'm done with this radio thing because I'm not good enough. But someone told me to fight. So I've had so many things that I've tried and I've failed and I've gotten up again. I could tell you stories for days as to what I've failed at.
What's been the most painful failure for you?
That's a loaded question. I think failure at relationships.
Okay.
I think that's one of my biggest regrets, that I'm sometimes unavailable to them. And yeah, when it comes back to me, you know, it's a horrible space to be in. You know, I've failed certain friendships. Where I've had narcissistic tendencies within the work that I do because I'm so I'm so deeply in it. You know, I forget the people around me. You know, I think sometimes I've failed as a daughter to my parents, where they need something and sometimes I just can't give it to them and I feel bad. But that's what it is. I've failed at businesses, you know, that have just literally tanked. I've lost a lot of money.
How do you bounce back?
That's a good question. Someone always tells me, what's the worst that could happen? So when I think of that, it's like, okay, I failed, but I'm still here. So we just need to just keep on going. Yeah.
I hear tenacity, hustling, hard work, faith. Which one of those is the strongest for you?
Faith.
Faith.
Because I can walk into a room, Trevor, and I'm just like, I don't know what's going to happen, but we're going to make this happen. You know, that's me. And my mom is always like, where did you get that from? You know, because my parents are, yeah, they're okay. But I've got another level of boldness that my mom never, until today, she's like, I don't know where this animal came from, but I like it.
Yeah. And it's seen you through quite a lot. What's the advice that you'd give to young people who are facing the challenges that you're facing, get knocked down, sometimes unable to get up, they don't have the support that they need? What advice would you give to them, those in the workspace, battling with corporate politics, those trying to get into business? What would be the biggest advice that you'd give to them?
So it's almost like a handbook, a book that I read quite a lot, 48 Laws of Power, right? So it's kind of given me insight as to how you handle a lot of the things in your life. I think we both share the passion of reading. So I think when you read certain books, they help you navigate through a lot of things. So I always encourage young people to read more. You'll expose your mind to different methods of fixing or dealing with things. Another thing that I would say is, what's the worst that could happen? What is the actual worst that could happen? If you're there now and you still have the opportunity to fix it, fix it. Don't panic. Look forward and figure your space out. Yeah.
Do you have a role model?
Yes.
You do have. Any that you would be able to name?
I've got so many. The world is full of amazing people. So it would be wrong of me to just have one.
Do you have a mentor? Do you have somebody that works with you that you go to and share?
My pastor is a very big component of my life. I think we share our spirituality and all the struggles that I go through. There's a lady called Nyenge Mahaka. Amazing woman. Branding, she's kind of been the one to tell me, go this way, do this. You have to do this in order for you to actually succeed in your branding. Mentorship is not only actually just physical, but you can look at someone and look at their model and how they've also done something, and they could mentor you from afar. There's a lady from Nigeria. Her name is Mo Abudu. She's a media mogul. I think she's one of the most successful media moguls in Africa. She has built an empire around a television station called Ebony. So Ebony was one of the first television stations that were created by a woman in Africa. So for me, I look at it and I'm like, wow, she can do it. So I can do it.
I can do it.
Yeah.
And I keep also hearing you, somebody told me this, somebody said this, and they made me come back. So in your life, having a mentor and having a role model, those are important things, am I right?
Don't ever take that for granted, because sometimes we feel like we have all the answers, but we really actually don't. So when you have a strong circle around you, it's not just one person, but multiple people can actually help direct your career, your spirituality, your family life. And for me, I think I've got people in different spaces that actually help me. Like I said, with my spirituality, I have someone who helps me. With my branding, I have someone who helps me. With just general life advice, I have someone else. So never take for granted the power of actually having people around you that can give you strong, sound advice.
Do you yourself provide mentorship to others?
Yes, I do.
You do?
I do.
Do you have lots of people coming to you for mentorship?
I do. I don't think I have enough time. But I do have one or two girls who actually, they've come out of my system of mentorship to actually just do very well. And There's also peer-to-peer mentorship. There's one lady by the name of Rebecca Mchenje. I think we have a lot of peer-to-peer mentorship, whereby you find she may have skills that you may not have, and you exchange. So I think I actually firmly believe in that as well. Mm. So, yeah.
Well, what's your biggest fear in life?
Failure.
Right.
It's cliche, right?
Yeah.
Failure. I'm scared that I won't fulfill my mandate. And fulfill it well. Mm. Yeah.
How do you overcome that fear?
You just have to keep on working every day towards your goals and reminding yourself why you started.
Fear can be paralyzing.
Yeah, it can.
It doesn't paralyze you.
Sometimes I think I have moments where it does. Mm. But someone will come and shake me out of it. You know, I rarely shake myself out of it. It's usually someone else who will come and say, you know what, you're worth it. You're of value. You make a difference to this world.
Do you think the journey that you've walked, brief as it might have been, do you think you have a sense of what your purpose is?
I have an idea.
You have an idea. What is that?
I need to shift my generation.
You need to. Wow, that's huge.
Yeah, I don't know how, but that's what God keeps on telling me. Mm-hmm. I don't know where, I don't know when. But I need to shift my generation.
That's a generational burden.
Yeah.
What would be the first few things that you need to do to shift the generation?
I think I need to make it okay to have certain conversations. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we come from an era where we couldn't say certain things. I think I've gotten into trouble over time about certain things that I've said online. And people are like, did you really say that? And people will ask me, who's your father? You know, because you can't just say that if you're not Zanu-BF. Mm-hmm. But I'm literally saying it from my own capacity, not because anyone sent me, not because I have something that I've been asked to do, or there's something at play that needs me to say certain things. But I just find myself saying things when I feel them. So, yeah.
Where does it come from?
I would be lying if I told you that there's a place where it comes from, but it's my truth.
Mm. It's your truth.
It's my truth.
It's your authenticity.
Yeah.
Which gets into trouble sometimes.
A lot of the times. God help me.
Now, the fact that you get into trouble for being authentic, for being vulnerable, is there a danger that society might shape and mold you into something else because you want to conform?
Yeah. I think that's the biggest challenge that we have, because I think it's almost already started, where there's a narrative that is created around you just being honest. And people will now start to build this image of you that's not really actually true. And I think the onus is on me to just correct that where I can, although it's already kind of gone that direction. But I need to constantly bring it back, bring it back. So that's why I really do believe I've got a lot of work to do.
Like you said, it's hard.
Yeah.
Because you're fighting against a headwind of some sort.
Yeah.
You confident you'll make this?
I don't know. Mm. But God willing, we'll get to the end the way we're supposed to.
Right. Looking 5 years, 10 years down the line, where will you be in terms of your ambitions, in terms of your purpose? What will success look like for Miss Red? 5 years, 10 years down the line, is she going to be a media mogul, owning radio stations, television stations? Mm-hmm. What's the ambition?
You said it.
I've said it.
You said it. You said it. I have a very clear image of what I am going to be. Not what I think, but what I know. I'm going to be a media mogul. Mm-hmm. It's not a cocky statement or whatever, but this is what I believe is going to happen. I'm going to be a media mogul. I'm going to have platforms, may not necessarily be radio, but definitely platforms that will accelerate the conversations of our generation. Mm. Yeah.
What conversations do you think we're not having, which we ought to be having?
We're not having conversations of celebration. We're not having conversations of how beautiful of a space that we actually have in this country, which I love so dearly, called Zimbabwe. We're not having conversations of, I'm actually not doing okay in my life. We're not having mental health conversations. Mm. We are not having and namari conversations. Mm. We're literally living something that is not true to us. And we're not giving our African story, where we come from, what makes us beautiful as a people. So those are the very conversations that I think our generation needs to start having for us to preserve ourselves. Mm. Yeah.
Is where you are right now a surprise, or this is what you've always wanted?
It's a surprise.
It's a surprise.
Yeah.
What has surprised you about yourself the most?
That I became so bold. I'm an introvert, actually. A lot of people don't believe me when I say this, but in a room I can be by the corner and just sit. Whereas, you know, the Miss Red brand is seen as this out of this world, bubbly personality, but I'm okay being by the corner and just sitting in silence. You know, so my boldness has really surprised me. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing.
So if your boldness has surprised you, where has it come from?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think I was molded as well as I was going through my paces. I was molded through the system which I'm in. So I think I look at the person who actually brought me into this, your Susan Makores, who's my CEO at AB, your Superman Diwanziras, who will be like, you need to go hard, you need to go in. Mm. And sometimes I actually feel like I wear a hat and then I take it off when I'm in certain places. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I take it off and I'm just the normal me. I like my sneakers. I like my shirt. I like my torn T-shirts. That's me. I'm not a very fussy person about a lot of things. So when I put on that mask, somebody else. Yeah.
You like yourself?
I love myself.
When you put on the mask?
No. No.
So which Miss Red do you like? The one that sits by the corner or the one that's loud? Which one do you like?
But that's the thing. There's only one Miss Red.
Yeah.
And then there's Samantha.
Okay.
Samantha's the one who sits by the corner.
Okay.
She's comfortable in not being known by anyone. Mm-hmm. She's comfortable walking to the shops, you know. Then Miss Red is, yeah.
Something else.
Something else.
You're comfortable with both of them.
Very comfortable.
Let's get to you and I both love reading. Mm-hmm. But what I found interesting is that you and your daughter are co-authoring a book.
Yes.
Talk to us about that book.
So I'm excited about that's one of the exciting projects that I actually have this year, because I found that I travel quite a lot in Zimbabwe and I see it's beautiful. If you ever get an opportunity, you need to do a road trip through Zimbabwe and see how beautiful it is. So as I was traveling, I was seeing a lot of deforestation happening. And global warming is also a very big thing that people don't talk about. A lot of people will say, no, it's not our problem. But it actually is our problem, where we see a lot of things happening, less rains, less water in our dams. So many things are happening with regards to global warming. And no one is really talking enough about it. So my daughter mentioned to me one time, she's like, "Mom, people are cutting down trees. What are they doing about it?" And I didn't have answers for her at the time. So I asked her, and I was like, "Can you do your research and just tell me more about this tree business and then come back to me with all your research?" I thought, you know, that was just going to be it. And, you know, we're not going to talk about this again. And she came with a book full of research. So I said, "Okay. So what are we going to do with this information?" And she says, "Mom, we need to write a book." Right? So I was like, "Oh, okay. That's an interesting way that we can actually spend time together. So let's figure it out." And that's where we started writing about this book. So I intend to have 10,000 trees planted in my personal capacity this year, with the help of the many people in Zimbabwe that also care about our environment. But also the book is going to also help articulate the need for us to protect our environment to the children. So it doesn't just start with us. We can have the conversation, but I think it's a conversation that needs to start earlier on to kids when they're still younger, how to protect our environment, because obviously we are the custodians of the next generation.
Wow.
So, yeah.
We look forward to that book. Let us know when it's out so that we can share the details of that book as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to an issue which you've expressed yourself quite strongly. What you think about men telling women what to wear, whether to have makeup, whether they should keep their receipts for their hair, or they should have natural yeah. hair. What's your view about men telling women how to look?
We have always been told what we can or cannot do by men. Yeah, time immemorial. It's never been, men, it doesn't matter what you are, what you do, or what you don't do. But women have been at the beginning of every conversation of a man to tell us what we can or cannot do. We conform ourselves to your liking as men. Everything has been for you, right, as men. But unfortunately, the world is changing. And we now understand the power of our own voices. So we need to get to a place of acceptance as men that it doesn't matter whether you tell me that I look good in makeup or don't makeup. I'm still, you know, I'm still okay. Whether I'm skinny or whether I'm chubby like me, it's still okay. Because at the end of the day, it's about me being comfortable within my own skin. And you don't have the right to tell me what is good, what is bad for me, according to you.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are you reading, and what books have made a huge impact in your life?
There's a lot of books. Like I said, 48 Laws of Power, it's almost like a handbook to me now, every time I refer to it. The Bible.
Who wrote the 40? Is it?
It was Green.
Okay. I forget authors. So,
yeah. Me as well. Someone Green. Yeah. R. Green.
Yeah.
And then there's another one called Mogul by Tiffany Fan. So that was one of the most powerful books for me because it narrated her journey to becoming a media mogul in the new age where you have digital media and so many other things that you're competing with versus terrestrial. So that kind of shifted my conversation with myself with regards to where I'm going as a media mogul. So that's probably one of my best books this far. And I read a lot of Sarah Jake's books. I think she's very powerful.
Right. Yeah. That's T.D. Jakes'
daughter. Yes.
Fantastic. T.D. Jakes is one of my favorite pastors. Mm-hmm. This is the book that I'm reading. Mm-hmm. It's called What You Do Is Who You Are, mm-hmm. How to Create Your Business Culture by Ben Horowitz. It's a great book that talks about how you set culture in an organization. In a country, and it starts off by telling the story of the slave who helped defeat the French in Haiti, mm-hmm. and the culture that made him do that. Mm-hmm. So it's a book that I recommend quite a lot. Samantha, Miss Red,
yes,
thank you for a great conversation.
Thank you for having me.
You are an inspiration to a lot of young people. Mm-hmm. You've achieved so much in a very short space of time. I'm inspired by the vision that you have of yourself, and we pray that that vision that you have of you becoming a huge media mogul comes to pass. So thank you so much for coming to In Conversation with Trevor.
Having me. I think there's still a lot to actually come, and there's still a lot of work to do, but I appreciate having been here.
Thank you. Let me turn to the audience back at home in the diaspora, on the continent, and all over the world. Thank you for watching In Conversation with Trevor. Let me remind you that In Conversation with Trevor is a weekly show, and we would like you to subscribe. There's a little subscribe button. Press that subscribe button so that you get notification every time we have a new show. We're a weekly show. Please don't miss out. So until next time, cheers.